Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to my podcast. You know, it's really nice when you are introducing yourself on your podcast and you get something caught in your throat. As soon as you say hello, like you're watching and waiting for the time countdown. And so, pardon my start to this, inauspicious as it may be. Hope all of you are well. Hope you've been listening to my podcast and recommending it to all of your friends. So this is an interesting topic today, why we become psychotherapists. Certainly we do have a reputation, don't we? You know, people say all the time, therapists are all screwed up and they have all these problems. And, you know, I think people have problems. I mean, think about all the people you know. And how many of them, family, friends, people that you've met through the course of your life, are just doing amazingly well, not necessarily, you know, financially or married or kids, but I'm speaking about just psychically, they just have their act together. They're able to operate, communicate, be with friends and family and work and their lives and live this life of real just, it's flowing, it's interesting, they're curious, they're not haunted by their past. They're able to see things as they are in a conscious way. Very, very difficult. So when here I am telling you about or talking about why we become psychotherapists, well, it would be very disingenuous for me to not talk about myself to a large degree. Now, this is a little bit hard for me because I was trained analytically, right? I was trained in psychoanalysis. And in psychoanalysis, which I think is absolutely, for any of you that are thinking of becoming a therapist, and regardless of what kind of theory you might want to end up as one of your favorites, or you want to be a cognitive behavioral therapist, or you want to be a narrative therapist, or you want to be a humanistic therapist or emotionally centered. There's a lot of names right now for different types of approaches to therapy. I recommend that you certainly learn analytical thinking because it just makes you very, it's a very deep way of understanding the psyche. And I will do a podcast on analytical thinking and why that's important for you when you are looking for a therapist to find someone who really understands it. Like I said, even though they may not be doing traditional psychoanalysis with you. But that is a tangent that I just found myself a little bit down the road on. So, but let me, it's not really a tangent. Let me get back to why I mentioned it, because in analytical thinking, we're supposed to be tabula rasa, right? We're supposed to be a blank slate. The idea of that is I don't reveal myself. Like, I don't say things to my patients about my life per se. Like, if a patient comes to me and says, well, my wife is like this, or my husband's like this, or my mother was like this, or my father died when I was five, or my mother beat me, or what have you. I don't say, no, none of this is true, so we don't, but let's just say, I don't say, well, my mother beat me and my dad died when I was five and I know what that's like, or my wife left me or my wife had an affair, you know, years ago and we got through it. I don't talk about myself to my patients. Now, well, we'll get into this a little bit later in this podcast, but I don't do that. And the reason why I don't do that is because I don't think it's helpful. If I thought it was helpful, I would tell my patients everything about me, and if I thought it would be helpful. But the idea of analytical thinking is that transference is curative, meaning that I don't want, if you're talking to me about something, you come to see me as a patient, and you're talking to me about feeling judged all the time, and you're thinking that I'm judging you, I don't want to tell you that I'm not judging you. I want you to tell me about feeling judged by me. So if I tell you all these things about me, it will affect the ability of transference to develop. And the reason why transference is important is because it's kind of living history. So you felt judged and you were a disappointment to your father, and now you're talking to me, and you may feel judged and that you're a disappointment to me. And instead of me disabusing you of that thought, I want to explore it with you. I want to unpack that with you, because that's based on something. It's not really based on what's happening today, right? Because I really don't. I really wouldn't. If I was disappointed in you, or I was just thinking that you were just some awful person, first of all, it would be hard to get me to be there. You'd have to be some horrible, horrible racist or something where I'd say, oh boy, I really don't like this person. And I would tell you, by the way, if that were the case, but in a clinical way. But I'm rambling, but I'm sorry, it's complicated. But I would want to explore the idea that you thought that you were disappointing me, and that so I don't reveal a lot. So I'm going to reveal some in here about in this podcast about psychotherapy. I'll tell you a story that happened to me when I was a boy. Okay. And we could kind of, the idea of why do we become therapists? Now, well, this is maybe part of why did Gary become a therapist. But we could transpose it into a lot of different people of different experiences. So I was a boy. I was probably about 11, maybe 12 years old. And my father took me, we were not religious people at all. I'm very cultural in whatever religious identification I may understand myself to have, but it's very, very cultural. I'm not someone who is dogmatic in my thinking. Anyway, it was at this temple that we belonged to, and it was all adult males. And I was about 11 or 12, and there was about maybe 15 men in a circle, and all the men were talking about world events. And I was one of the people sitting in among these 15 or 16 men, older Jewish men, you know, all white, all, you know, upper middle class. And you would, as a little boy, as a boy, you think they're very wise and intelligent and talking about world events. And I was listening, and I was enthralled, because there was all these ideas going back and forth and back and forth, and really fascinating, really interesting to me. And they were talking about something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I had a thought that came to my little 12-year-old brain that I thought was really smart. I don't remember what the thought was, but at the time I know that I thought it was really smart and pertinent to the situation and to what everyone was talking about. But all these men were talking back and forth. No, well, what about this? Da, 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 and all these strong, powerful men with these gigantic penises, metaphorically, of course, and maybe some of them did. But they were just swinging their dicks around and throwing out all these ideas. But I just so wanted to say my thought. And I was sitting there, and I could just remember that my heart was racing and pounding, and I could feel it thumping in my chest. And I had this adrenaline coursing through my, because I wanted to say, I wanted to say something. I wanted to add. I wanted to be part of this. It was just so exciting to me. But I couldn't, because these men were just talking back and forth and talking back and forth and talking back and forth, and this was going on for the longest time. But finally, after what seemed like an eternity, there was a slight pause in the conversation. When I say a slight pause, what I'm saying is maybe a second or so, or where someone didn't say something. Like there was someone, there was a period that someone said something, there was a period, and someone wasn't talking over that period, and there was maybe a second of rest between the next onslaught of a lot of conversations. And so I said to myself, well, self, you have an opportunity. Now you can say something and you could sound really important and you could add to the discussion. And maybe, you know, people would say, that's very interesting, Harry. I've never thought about that. And all these fantasies go through your mind and people could discuss that. And I could feel like just amazed and so forth. So I said, I think, and those were the two words that I was able to get out. My father, who was to my left, looked at me, turned to me, and said, shut up. This is for adults. You just sit there and listen. Right? I mean, not in a whisper, kind of like in the tone that I just said. So that's what he said to me. Now, silence in the group, complete silence. All these men were looking at me and with embarrassment, or maybe as I look back, it was sadness, or maybe they were outraged at what my father did, but certainly I didn't take it that way. I thought they were looking at me like, what a pathetic person I was. Like, some of them averted. I looked up for a second at the men, and some of them averted my eyes. Some of them looked down. Some of them just pity. I was deeply humiliated. Deeply humiliated. Trying so hard. I mean, you're trying as a boy so hard not to start to cry, right? Not to cry like a little bitch, right? Not to sob and not to be that person, because I'm already feeling completely humiliated. So I just looked down and my eyes were tearing up, and I just looked down and that was it. The group went on for about another 20, 25, 30 minutes. And I don't remember really anything after that. I don't remember the drive home. I'm sure my father didn't say anything to me. No apology, no nothing. But what was interesting about that, as I think about it now, as I thought about it, as I grew older, is that the shame, what I understood is I felt ashamed. Right? It was me who felt ashamed. It wasn't my father. I felt humiliated. I felt embarrassed. I felt less than. I felt this person was telling me to shut up, that I didn't have anything to say, that whatever I had to say was useless and worthless, and no one really cared about Gary. Now, is there a direct line between that event when I was 11 or 12 and my decision to become a therapist? Here I am, Dr. Gary Penn, right? Author, public speaker. I was on KFI radio for a while. I give seminars around the world. People come and seek me out. They take the time and they pay me money to listen to what I have to say, to speak with me, to have me speak with them. Is there a connection between this event? Now you have to know, and that this event, this kind of thing that happens, isn't a one-off, meaning I wasn't being told to shut up all the time. But you can imagine that if that was something that a parent can do to a child, that you would think that the home that the child grew up in, the home that I grew up in from 0 till 12 to that moment at that time in that event, that I wasn't encouraged to be this person who was like really, so what do you think? And politics at home around the dinner table. And so, Gary, what do you think? Like, none of that was happening. So there was this, but that was just a moment where it was exceptionally horrid and humiliating. But there wasn't all this other time where it was just this incredible home that that idea was talked about. So is there a direct connection between that idea that I was not important, that no one was listening to me, that no one really cared about me, to me being a psychologist today? In my world, there wasn't a direct one. There was a lot of indirect ones that took me to the idea of me becoming a therapist, me becoming a psychologist. There were a lot of indirect ones, but there weren't, I don't know if it was a direct one. But I think that a lot of therapists can point to these kinds of these kind of events. A lot of the therapists that I work with, I've taught for many years, I've had a master's and doctoral level for psychologists, for people who are becoming therapists and psychologists. And you do see a lot of wounded people. Like I said earlier, so many people are wounded to varying degrees. And there are many people who are therapists who had really terrific upbringings and so forth. Now, listen, if you ask me, I had a happy home life in a lot of ways. But, you know, look, you could be happy eating tree bark, literally, or you could be happy having emotional tree bark, because you don't really know that I'm living, you know, in a dungeon, because the dungeon is my home. So you play with your siblings and you have friends and you go do your thing. So it wasn't like I was living in some kind of Guantanamo, you know. It was what it was. So I don't know, right? I really don't know if it was a direct point A to point B, but I do think that it is part of the mosaic of why we become therapists. Something that we are trying to understand, something that we are trying to work through, that we have made a commitment. Now, I think a lot of ways between psychotherapists, people in this field, and other people is sometimes other people, well, they just have different, you know, different things that animate them, and they want to do farming, or they want to do architecture or business or what have you. But us therapists, we are committed to saying we want to evolve, and we want to unpack what happened. And it's not that I don't think the therapist had anything worse happen to us than happens to you who are not therapists. I think we all have our challenges, and some of us don't have any challenges or had any challenges. But I think we've made the decision, you know, this is so interesting that this happened. And it's not because we're so wounded that we have to somehow take this time to work through it, but I think it's interesting to us. Like, how does this happen? It's kind of like the person who's an engineer, or electronically motor, you know, has that skill set. If a toaster breaks, or they have a radio, they might unscrew it and see how it works. They want to know, how does this radio work? Why is this toaster broken? And they're curious, you know, they're just curious, and it's interesting, and they're good. And they're able to see things that way, and they're able to say, oh, I see what's wrong here. This transistor or this wire was off, and they are able to fix things that way. I think for therapists, for psychologists, we're kind of the same way, but with the psyche, with the human psyche. We want to say, oh, we have a desire to try to understand, to try to connect. It's such a fascinating job. It's such an amazingly fascinating job. Now, I will tell you, and I firmly believe this, that there are not a lot of great therapists out there, right? There are not a lot. Well, listen, this isn't an indictment on therapy. I think therapy is an amazingly noble job, and it's a career, it's a calling, but there are not a lot of great anything, if you think about it, right? There's not a lot of great plumbers. There are not a lot of great lawyers. There are not a lot of great architects. Most people are average. But that is the definition of average, right? We do know that, that most people are average. The difference, of course, is that when you come in and bring your car to a mechanic for a tune-up, yes, you want the mechanic to do a great job, but if they don't, you could just, you know, bring it in again and do it. With a therapist, you're not fixing a toaster, you're not fixing a tire. You're working on someone's life and their well-being and helping them achieve their dreams. So it's a much higher stakes in a lot of ways. So we become therapists because we find it very interesting and compelling. Now, there are a lot of therapists that I see that are, let's say, that I've worked with and known, that let's say they experienced eating disorders when they were young, or so they might specialize in anorexia, or they may specialize in some kind of eating disorder. Or there are other therapists that were addicts. So they become a therapist that specialized in addiction. So it's kind of what they know, and they know the language, and they understand that thing, and they want to kind of give back. They want to connect with people. They want to be helpful and compassionate to these people. So that's kind of interesting as well. But the thing about it is, and this is important for therapists to understand, is it's not enough for us just to have been an addict and now I have my, you know, letters after my name, so that makes me a really great therapist who was an addict. Or just because that my dad told me to shut up when I was 12, that I'm really great at being a therapist, or I'm really great at finding you a way to express yourself. It's not that simple. I think it's, what is a therapist, like, there are a lot of therapists that want, if I ask them, I go like, when I teach, I'll say, like, why do you want to become a therapist? And some people will say, well, because I want to help people. And I say, well, you know, if you want to help people, you know, go to Nordstrom's and work at Nordstrom's, and then people will come up to you and say, you say, can I help you? And it's not that, you know, you don't want to help people, but it's not that simple. I think there are some therapists that just have a need to make people feel better, right? They just have this idea of making people feel better. So someone will come in and they'll tell a story, and they'll say this really bad story about their, you know, their friend that hurt them, or that their parents treated them badly, or their husband treats them badly. And the therapist has this kind of way of relating to them of they're not on, like, they're not getting what the therapist is not getting what the therapy needs to be. the therapist will ask a lot of questions, and how does that feel, and so what do you think about that? Or sometimes the therapist will try to get the patient to problem solve. Well, maybe you can do this, or maybe you can do that. Have you tried this? And it comes very surfacey. Other therapists have this need to be very loving, like, God, you know, you really, that's so hard. It seems like you've tried so hard in your life, and, you know, you deserve better. Like, you really deserve better. And these kinds of therapists are very emotional and very empathic and very sympathetic. All qualities, by the way, that a therapist certainly needs to have and wants to have. But why does the therapist lead with that? Right? Why does the therapist lead with that? What is the need of the therapist to do that? A lot of these people have had a lot of things that they've experienced, and if they haven't really unpacked it, and if they haven't really understood how it impacts them, it really leaves them unable to be an effective therapist in general overall to the population that will come to see them. Now, I'm talking about clinical psychology. People are coming to see you for a variety of reasons. I hate my job. I hate my wife. I hate my husband. I hate my life. I'm feeling existential angst. And we, as therapists, we have to figure out, what is it? What's going on for this person? What is their story? And if I find myself that I have a block, that I have not been able to kind of work through it, then I am really unable to help the person who's coming to me for help. I'm totally unable to help them. Because it's not enough for your therapist to like you. It's not enough for your therapist to want to help you, to be compassionate and caring. The therapist has to have worked on his self, herself, to a degree where they've really kind of gone through this and they've kind of understood. I'll give you an example. When I was in training, I had a patient who, I just hated this person. I really despised her. She was the worst hour of my week, without a doubt. It was so difficult. I found her physically really unattractive. She was in her mid-20s. And she would wear very revealing clothes. Now, it wasn't sexy clothes. It was kind of like shorts and tank tops. And it wasn't like she was showing cleavage or anything like that. It was just showing a lot of skin and her posture on the couch. Her legs would be wide open. And again, it wasn't like she was showing me her vagina or anything. It was just like she was just like sprawled all over the couch. And she was very bombastic. And she was just very confused. And she was very pent up sexually. Very pent up sexually. Her father was, when she grew up, she was from the South, was this big person in the church, and he thought that, you know, she was all confused about sex, and yet she was just trying to overcome it by being very bombastic, and I really just couldn't stand working with her. The best part about our sessions were when I was able to say, well, time's up, and, you know, I'll see you next week. So I was in training, and in my training site, I was required to videotape sessions periodically, of course, with the patient's full knowledge. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to bring in this person because I want all of my supervision group, all the other, you know, psych assistants and my supervisor to see that, look what I'm dealing with and look how hard this is. I was thinking I'd get all the sympathy. And I was making all these analytical interpretations. I thought I was being really brilliant. Well, she was sitting on the couch and she had her legs totally like in a V shape towards me, one leg one way, one leg on the back of the couch, sprawling with her hands behind her back and just going on and on and on. And I was totally ignoring, completely ignoring her body language, completely. I was only responding to what she was saying. And I was trying to say, well, this is da 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 in a very analytical way, but totally. And I was so funny when you're a narcissist, which I was a small N narcissist. Yes, I'm so smart and thinking I was so brilliant. When you're a narcissist, you have narcissistic tendencies. You often get your ass handed to you because the world doesn't comply with, the narcissist delusions of grandeur that he or she carries with them. I was showing them this, and everyone around me was just like, so we stopped the tape, and everyone was saying, Gary, I think there's openings at UPS. Like, maybe you're in the wrong field. They said, look what this poor girl is doing. Look at the way she's sitting. Look what she's showing you. Look what she's telling you. Look all that, and you're totally ignoring that. And I realized that for other stories that I didn't tell you so far in this podcast, that I was so fucked up is the right word, so fucked up sexually, in my own psychology, in my own sense of understanding sexuality and being free and open and comfortable, because my family was so dysfunctional in that way that I completely ignored it. And so here this poor girl was coming to see me for issues of her own sexuality and her own issues with was trying to overcome the shame and uncomfortability. And it was like she was coming to see me, and there was no way that I was able to help her because I was so blocked and so lost myself. Profoundly lost. Therapists cannot work with a patient in areas and ways that they have not worked through themselves. They just can't. They just can't. And for those therapists that can't, they just become really super nice. Like, oh, you deserve better. Oh, it's so sad. I'm so proud. Like, therapists rely on that because they don't have the, I think, and oftentimes they don't have the ability. They haven't gone through the work that will allow them to actually take their patient to a way that's not just saying you deserve better, but saying, let's unpack this. I went to my therapist after that supervision session. I started thinking about it really hard. I started working on this. I started trying to figure out what the hell happened to me. Why am I so blocked out? And so I set to work on myself. After a while, again, another session with her, she came in and she was sitting in the same way. And I said to her, it seems that you're very comfortable and in sitting here and kind of showing you show a lot of your skin, you show a lot of your body. It seems like you want me to know that, you're a woman and you're a sexual woman, and that you want to be free in expressing that, and that it's okay for you to be this person who's showing me this side of yourself. Well, there was a pause, and it was as if, I don't know, it's just everything cleared. All the smoke just cleared from the room. It's like finally, after 6 months or 8 months of this person coming to see me every week, the therapy started. She exhaled. I exhaled. I instantly stopped hating her. She was no longer the worst hour of my week. I liked working with her. I liked her. She wasn't disgusting to me. She was just like me, and I was not so disgusting to myself in that area. Freud said that when you make an interpretation to a patient, that one of the ways that you know, or a primary way that you know that the interpretation is on target, is if it brings a sense of relief to the patient. Well, I think we both were the patient, this woman and myself, in that interchange, that we both were the patient, because I felt relief for sure, as did she. And it was something that was important, it was real, hit home. And I was able to break through on that level. We are the walking wounded. Psychologists are the walking wounded in a lot of ways. But I know that, and I think we all know this to a certain degree, that okay, what's the job? What's my job in helping you? What am I trying to do with the people I work with? I don't want to say to you, or I don't want you to live a life where the first 5 or 10 or 15 years or events that happened last week or last month have such an impact on you for the rest of your life. I want myself to become a free thinker. I want the people I work with to become free thinkers. I want people to become conscious. I want to understand how we, I want you to help you understand, like, why do you keep on picking men who are going to be unavailable, or women who are going to be unavailable, or why you feel like you can never tell your mother that you're angry with her, or you're not going to come home for Christmas this year because you're afraid, or you live in fear, or you have anxiety or depression. I want to help you with that. I want to help to understand, not just say, oh, you deserve better, but to say, let me understand why that. Let me explore this with you. Let us explore it together. Let us take this journey together. And it's so nice when you are able, and when you do have a good therapist, and you do have someone who really gets it, really understands it, really understands the work, really understands how things get stuck, understands the trap doors, understands ways to connect with people. And if you could feel, if you go to a therapist and you feel understood, and you feel like someone is capable, it's so nice when you can go and tell someone your darkest secrets and feel completely ashamed, but not ashamed, because you feel the person is not there to tattoo you, not there to hate you, not there to do anything but to say, yes, I understand. I get that. I get that you have these sexual fantasies, or that you find disgusting, or that you want your mother to die or something, and say, yeah, that's a totally human feeling. I get that. And if someone can walk that walk with you and try to understand why that's so. But we as therapists, we need to be able to walk that walk with you, with ourselves, which why therapy is such a wonderful, I don't know if it's a profession, it's just kind of a calling, but it's such a wonderful thing to do because it keeps me humming, it keeps me clean, it cleans me out, it allows me to go on journeys with myself and with you. I tell people all the time, be a good consumer. That if you go to a therapist and it doesn't feel right, find somebody else. It's hard for a lot of people. It really is. It's really hard because we're feeling insecure in the beginning, and we don't feel it. Maybe we're like feeling whatever, and you know, the therapist. We're not like the therapist, and we go, well, maybe it's my fault. It's not the therapist. It's doctor's fault, and we feel very uncomfortable. But you have to be a good consumer. Years ago, it was analysis, and the first guy sought out was this iconic Kleinian analysis. And he was one of the top, if not the top, I guess, in the Mount Rushmore of people in L.A. He was on that mountain. And I sought him out, and I said, I'd like to come in for a session. And he said, okay, Gary. So I came into the session with him, and I sat down with him, and I talked about, I just talked about some history in my life and why I was coming to him and why I wanted to work with him. And at the end of the hour, he said to me, Gary, I'm 85 years old. And I'm not going to be able to take on a real, you know, new situation right now, a new patient. I'm not going to be able to do that. So I'm not going to be able to work with you. But I'm going to be thinking about what you've told me today. And I'm going to think about people who I think that will be really terrific with you. And I know the top analyst in the city. And I'm going to find someone that will really be great for you. So I was disappointed, but I said, okay, what am I going to do? So a couple weeks go by, and he gives me this, calls me up and says, this is the man. He's one of the top analysts in the city, and I told him that you're going to be calling him. So fair enough, I call this guy. And I had my office in Beverly Hills at the time. And this man, he was an analyst, he's a therapist, and he had his office, he worked out of his home. And I was in Beverly Hills, and this his home was about 2 miles away, like north of Sunset off of Beverly Drive. And we made an appointment. So at 1 o'clock, Tuesday, let me remember this. And I saw patients from 12 to 12:50, but I ended like 5 minutes early, which I never did. And I just said, I am sorry, but I have this whatever, and I got in my car and I ran out. And when you have a new therapist and you think about a new therapist and you're thinking about seeing this person, you already have fantasies. This person is going to be this or this. And it's kind of like a date. Like you think, all right, what's he going to be like? What's he going to be like? And you kind of fill in the gaps a lot. But I ran up there in my car and I got in my car in the parking lot and I ran up and I was speeding, I'm sure, got up to his house. And there was a gate, and there was a bell on the outside, a big gate, so I rang it. And he goes, hello. I go, hello, it's Gary Penn. The man said, who? I go, Gary Penn. He goes, who? I said, I thought we had a 1 o'clock appointment. He goes, oh, right. He forgot about me. So the first session was a blur. Again, the same thing, just unpacking, and it was just disconcerting. So we made another appointment, and I came in, and I had more time to be, you know, to be thoughtful about it. And this was a man in his 60s, and again, apparently a very well-known therapist. And I gave him a gift. I was the perfect patient. I said, you know, it's interesting that what happened, like I'm a psychologist, and certainly with new patients, it's been, happened to me before where I forgot that someone was coming to see me. And so I totally understand. But, you know, it was interesting because Dr. Mason couldn't see me, and I was very disappointed about that. And then I come to see you, and you, you know, forgot that I was coming. And it's kind of reminding me of my relationship with my father. I mean, what a softball that a patient can give his therapist. Like right there, I gave him months of work. Like let's just be a touchdown of working together and understanding. Wouldn't this be great? what did this guy do? Instead of going there and say, tell me more about your father, tell me more about your relationship with that. I did forget about it. Let me talk. Tell me about how that felt and what that brought up for you, and the disappointments, and, you know, not feeling like you're enough and whatever it was. There was so much material to talk about. My therapist started to say, he didn't start. He said to me, well, you know, we're doing construction in my house. And he started doing all this, and he started to defend himself. And I'm sitting there, I'm going, what? To myself, I'm going, are you kidding me? This is one of the top therapists in the city, and he's defending himself. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. The fact that he forgot, like, who cares? I wasn't talking about that. But he made it about that. He had to defend himself. This was the psychology of the therapist. And it didn't matter whether you're a new therapist or a man who's been doing this for 40 years and apparently is very esteemed. And I just thought to myself, wow. Well, I went one more session with him, and then I said, you know, I'm not feeling it. It's not working out. Thank you very much. And I started with someone else. That was terrific. But that man, even though very trained, and I'm sure he knew that he wasn't supposed to do what he did, couldn't get out of his own way. We as therapists have to be clean about it. We are not, I think we all, my stories, like I wasn't gang raped and I wasn't locked in a closet. We all have our things. Me, you, we all do. How we work on it, how we understand it. One of my sayings is that either we deal with our issues or our issues will deal with us. And when you go out and you look for a therapist, make sure that you find a therapist that has dealt with his or her issues instead of having their issues deal with them. Because that therapist will help you to be able to deal with your issues. Like I said, it doesn't matter if you're black and I'm not. It doesn't matter if you were adopted and I'm not. It doesn't matter if your parents died when you were young and mine didn't. I have to be in the moment with you. Because if you were physically abused and I was physically abused, but I was physically abused in my idiosyncratic way, different than yours. I might have a different support system or a lack of one, or a different culture, or a different financial. I don't have to mimic you. I don't have to be someone who had an eating disorder in order to work with you. But I have to be clear of mind. I have to be open and have to have the flow within myself to be able to go to places and to understand it and to really be aware with you. Well, all right. I think that's enough for one podcast. I think it's, there's just so much to talk about and explore. But I love this stuff. I think it's just fascinating to me. I think therapists are fascinating. I love when there are great therapists, and I understand why there are not great therapists, and I understand why there are people who do good jobs, and sometimes good is good. Whatever that means. Anyway, I think I've talked myself out right now. All right. Thank you for listening. This is Dr. Gary Tan. Till next time, be well.